on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today is Tuesday, September 2nd, 2025. And I know this is crazy. The month of August, it's already gone. We are already into September, well into the second half of 2025, and almost just around the corner, a new year. Therefore, especially given historically what has happened in this month, now is not the time to lose focus. And so we here at InvestTalk have one goal, one mission, one objective for this podcast, for all of the content we put out on YouTube and on Instagram, and that is to help you become a better investor. We want to help you understand market dynamics, especially how they might affect your portfolios and therefore affect your lives. As always, we bring to the table a mixture of educational and actionable items, but you also bring something too. You are a very important part of this show by supplying us with your finance and investment questions. Through that, we start to understand better what you care about. Now, in just a bit, I'm going to talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics that I have for you today, but let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, I wanted to see what you thought about a stock by the name of, I believe it's Amprius Technologies. The ticker symbol is AMPX. I already own a little bit of this right now, but I feel like I should be buying more. Just wanted to get your opinion on the company. Thank you so much.
Amprius Technologies is ticker AMPX. They develop, manufacture, and market ultra-high energy lithium-ion batteries using a bunch of technology for various industries, aerospace, drones, electric vehicles, other mobility applications as well. Oh, excuse me, a little bit of allergy issues. Now, over the past 6 months, this company has done particularly well. Over the past year, they're up 584%, up 161% year to date. Sales growing tremendously from about $4.6 billion back in 2020 up to about $65 billion, where it's projected to be this year, though still not making any money. Net margin tremendously negative over the past 5 years, continuing projected to be negative into 2025. Even though the stock has done really well, right? They IPO'd back in the end of, honestly, just about 3 years ago, right? September 16th of 2022. Big jump on their IPO, still have not made it back to that price, split adjusted $13 a share, currently trading at $7.32 a share. Now, what has driven this price higher over the past 3 months? Well, they did power a 67-day continuous flight using their ultra-high energy batteries, right? That is one of the most difficult parts of a green energy transition, of electric vehicles, of autonomous drones. It's the efficiency of the batteries. They've had pretty strong traction in deliveries. They've been expanding their manufacturing base as well. And then on a more broad scale, right, they're shifting towards, or rather away from the development phase of their business, more towards the commercialization part of their business. They also have integrated and have some contracts with big companies like Amazon through their Amazon Devices Climate Tech Accelerator. Now, over the next couple months, right, what do you want to look for? You want to look for more visibility. You want to look for increasing technical scale. You want to look for upcoming earnings set to be reported in the middle of November. But for me, right, this is a company that has issued a bunch of shares, even since their IPO, up from 80 million to 120 million. It's a company that has almost 11% short interest out there. It's not making any profits. It's a small guy, $1 billion market cap company. Those tend to do poorly in inflationary environments. And from a manufacturing inflationary standpoint, that could be where we are more likely to be headed. So, you know, Steve used to say it, and I tend to agree, Don't invest in companies that are losing money. This is one of those companies. I know it looks super juicy, 584% over the past year. A lot of risk out there. A lot of risk. That is Amprius Technologies, ticker AMPX. Got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this topic, how a Fed interest rate cut could impact your finances soon. An anticipated Fed rate cut this month could lower borrowing costs, reduce savings yields, and influence mortgage rates. Also, we'll touch on consumer spending came in a bit strong, but core inflation a bit warm, especially on services. We'll also touch on the end of the de minimis exemption, what that means for businesses, what that means for you. And should we have time at the end of the show, an interesting story on, interesting is a good word, a little creepy, Meta creating flirty chatbots of Taylor Swift and other celebrities, and surprise, surprise, they did not ask for permission. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on delisted stocks, and another on the YieldMax Ultra Option Income Strategy ETF, ticker ULTY. We also will have some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. We're headed into a break. It's a quick one. It's our first one. And when we come back, we'll answer more of your questions, talk about that main focus point, and hopefully get a live call directly from you. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
We all know that working in a small business means that you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. With Upwork, you can find specialized freelancers in marketing, development, design, and more. Experts who are ready to help you take your business to the next level. Companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in the way they staff key projects and initiatives. By accessing a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, AI, design, admin support, marketing, and more. Upwork is a one-stop shop to find, hire, and pay top freelance talent. Upwork can save you time and help keep costs in check. And posting a job on Upwork is easy. There's no cost to join, so you can register and then browse freelancer profiles. Plus, you can get help drafting a job post and even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that understand you. Upwork makes the entire process easier, simpler, and more affordable with industry low fees. So, post a job today and hire tomorrow with Upwork. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That is Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today, the first trading day of the month of September. How'd it do? Pretty negative. Opened big down, early on. Clawed its way back a bit. The Dow finished down 55 basis points. S&P 500 down 69 basis points. NASDAQ down 82. Russell 2000 down 60. Big tech, among the worst performers of the day. Though towards the end of the day, right, as with most stocks, finishing well off of the lows that we saw early on in the trading session. Semis, another underperformer on the day. Chemicals, credit cards, banks, private equity, home builders, some of the worst performers. Energy, staples, precious metal miners, managed care, biotech, managed care, retail, all doing pretty well today relative to the rest of the market. On the bond side, treasuries under pressure yet again. Yields up 4 to 5 basis points. Yields on the 30-year bond actually briefly went above that 5% level, something that we haven't seen maybe in a couple months. I don't know. Time kind of flows together these days. Dollar index up 60 basis points. Gold finished up 2.2%, putting it at a fresh record close above $3,500 an ounce. And crude oil settled up about 2.5% as well. The theme of the day seemed to me probably to be risk off, right? We see that in September. It is a month that typically does not do well for stocks. You had fiscal pressures. You had political instability remaining front and center, not just in the U.S., but globally. Well, analysts are also citing other factors, right? You got Fed independence risk. You have upward pressure on inflation and inflation expectations. You have a resilient enough economy that isn't quite beleaguered by anything, but certainly doesn't appear to be as robust as it was. Tariffs also a big focus today. The IEEPA ruled either Friday, I think it was Friday night, that the tariffs implemented by the president are illegal and breaches the authority that he is calling, the illegal authority he said he's using to implement them, but they will remain in effect for now as the case is likely set to go to the United States Supreme Court. Now, with that being said, right, Wall Street is expecting the administration to just use other strategies to offset tariffs that have been deemed illegal. There were also some dovish tariff remarks from the Trump administration, the U.S. holding back, imposing secondary sanctions on China, despite saying that those countries that would provide support to Russia may be hit with those sanctions. You also, as I mentioned, have the focus on seasonal headwinds, right? September is by far the worst month of the year for stocks. Now, on the economic calendar, we have ISM Manufacturing Index of 48.7, slightly below the consensus of 49.2. New orders back in expansion territory. Well, prices paid index a little bit improved to the lowest since February. The employment index also slightly improved, but remained near last month's level that was tied for the lowest since June of, I think, 2022 it was. Or sorry, 2020. July construction spending also came in, posting a surprise contraction. Final August S&P Global Manufacturing PMI marked down 30 basis points to 53. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, on Wednesday, we get JOLTS job openings, factory orders, and the Fed Beige Book. Those are the highlights. ADP private payrolls, final Q2 non-farm productivity and unit labor costs, as well as initial claims, trade balance, and ISM services, all set for a busy, busy Thursday. And rounding out the week on Friday will be the August employment report. Okay, let's take a look at our next question. This one hot off the presses from our YouTube comment section. As a reminder, not only do we post the question answers, you can see the charts, the focus points, all these things on YouTube. We also have YouTube-specific content, various series. The classroom series is something that was popular that we're starting up again. The aim to continue the education outside of our traditional podcast format. And so when you're over there, if you have a question, you can leave it in the comment section of our YouTube channel. This one comes from John from Oregon. It says, what are your thoughts on OKE near a 52-week low? What are your thoughts on the next couple of years? Is this a good buy point? OKE is One Oak Inc. It engages in gathering, processing, and facilitating the transportation and storage and marketing of natural gas. It is a $48 billion market cap company, has about $31 billion in debt. So there is a lot of leverage for this company broadly. And it's had a rough year, as have a lot of natural gas names, right? It's down 25.68% year to date. It's one of those midstream energy infrastructure names. It's headquartered in Oklahoma. Again, fairly large name, a lot of broad exposure to the U.S. region. And some of the things that really, you know, affected it over the past 3 months is earnings and acquisition gains, right? They reported profit. They lifted gains from recent acquisitions. But at the same time, you have, and again, that's why it's only down 10% over the past 3 months compared to 25% year to date. You do still have some weaker structural issues within the natural gas space that has made it problematic for companies such as these. A lot of natural gas names are not doing well. Now, compared to its industry, it's down even worse, down 23.5% relative to its industry. That's after outperforming by 6.4% last year. And so, you know, what should we be looking for this type of name? Well, you want to be looking at capacity utilization. There are a lot of projects in the pipeline, no pun intended. What does that debt financing look like? I know they might have a lot of debt that's refinancing in this period of time. And but it does look pretty cheap, right? It's trading at 12.9 times forward-looking earnings, price to book 2.2 times. I think it's a solid company. It's a name that we have owned on and off for clients. We do continue to own it for clients, albeit at a smaller weight just because of how we're distributing our energy weight across our various strategies. But it is, more than anything, a victim of its leverage, meaning that in times where cyclically things aren't going as well for the natural gas space, it's going to do worse. But really just the cyclical nature of the industry and the dynamics of the natural gas market as well. And so from a long-term perspective, given the energy demands from AI CapEx, from all these different companies, and generally just growing energy demands broadly, having a midstream name like this over the long term can certainly be beneficial. That is ONEOK, ticker OKE. We're moving into a break, still to come, my main focus point. A lot of talking points and more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call now. The InvestTalk Anytime listener line is 888-99-CHART.
'25 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you want to get through sometime before 5 p.m. and talk to me live. All right, let's move to our main focus point today. And that is about the Federal Reserve and about interest rates, namely how a Fed interest rate cut can impact your finances. And the reason why this is relevant is coming out of the meeting in Jackson Hole and with subsequent conversations with various Fed governors, and based upon what the market is pricing, there is a high likelihood that we are going to see a Fed rate cut this September. Now, it still does depend on incoming economic data, but again, the market has pretty much made up its mind here. And when this initially was priced in, this optimism, this dovish turn, well, the Dow surged 800 points, right? It hit a record high. Investors cheered what hopefully was, but in my opinion is unlikely to be, a corner turned, finally. Now, what happens when the Fed cuts rates? Because the Fed is focused on the short end of the curve, right? The overnight lending rate. It's one of the instruments they have for controlling growth within the market. Well, savings rates, CD rates, those are likely to drop, especially for new deposits. If you already have a CD, a certificate of deposit with the bank, if you already have a fixed rate instrument, well, that's going to remain unchanged, right? It's going to be whatever the rate is in the covenant for that specific instrument. We're just worried about new issuances here. Now, online banks may still continue to offer better yields. They might be slightly lower, but given what they're trying to, or rather what they're up against, right, trying to pull competitively, aggressively from traditional bank deposits, you could see online bank yields falling by less than your traditional banks. Now, on the opposite side, right, what if you are borrowing money? Well, if you're borrowing money and you had a fixed rate loan, you are out of luck. Your interest rate is not going to go down. However, if you're on a variable rate loan, meaning that it moves up and down as the prevailing market's interest rate does, well, you could see a little bit of a decrease as the Fed starts to cut rates. But it's also important to note, right, things don't always just happen right at once. Just because the Fed is moving their target range doesn't mean that, okay, the next day all rates will fall. Personal loan rates can lag. They tend to drop more slowly and depend more heavily on what bucket you're already in with respect to credit worthiness. Now, most people's form of debt that they take on is credit card debt. Always the best idea to pay off every month. But if you're the type of person that maybe got away from them, you have interest-bearing revolving credit card debt, well, that's likely to fall as well, but again, only slightly. Probably still going to average over 20% even after the rate cut, making it critical for you, if you're trying to plan for your financial future, to first work on getting rid of this high-yield revolving credit card debt. Interestingly enough, one of the best strategies for this, going to the credit card company and asking for a lower rate. let's put it this way. If you're lending somebody money and now they could go out and get a new loan for cheaper than what you have given them in terms of the rate, would you just lower it without them asking? No. And that's why sometimes you go to these companies, you go to these companies directly. It's more effective. Many customers succeed with this approach. Now, the one that you're probably the most interested in is the one that, unfortunately, I don't have the best news about, and that is mortgage rates, right? We talk about this all the time. What is locking people in to their homes? People who want to downsize, people who want to upgrade, people who can't purchase a new home in the first place. And a lot of the times, that is the mortgage rate. We have seen a historic level of new homes being sold relative to existing homes. And the reason for that is people in existing homes generally don't have 7% mortgages right now, right? They don't have 6.5-7% mortgages. Most of the mortgages are down 4% and lower. And so a lot of those people would love for interest rates to come down so they can refinance or perhaps even move. They're currently locked in. Well, the reality is you're probably not going to see mortgage rates fall much. Why? Talked about it at the top. The Fed is focused on the shorter end of the curve. That's not where mortgage rates are. Think about the mismatch there. Most people are taking 10, 15, mostly 30-year fixed mortgages. So, you know, 0 to 3 month, not really going to affect that. Overnight, not really going to affect that. And so that's predominantly tied to the 10-year treasury yield, to the 30-year yield. And that's just something that the Fed does not control. Here's the most key part here, right? As we've seen, historically, empirically, over decades, just because the Fed may be cutting rates now, doesn't mean it'll continue cutting rates in the future. Because it is acting in a way that, again, is data dependent. And should inflation be persistent, should fiscal pressures start to weigh really heavily on the long end of the curve as we're taking on more and more debt with record deficits, well, this could keep a lot of these things at bay as well. It could lessen the effect that you could see with your finances, specifically on the one that we all are looking for the most, those darn mortgage rates. Alrighty, well, one thing that I do want to talk about is what we are going to be discussing on the next Invest Talk. That topic will be how Generation X faces unique retirement challenges. So the question is, can they catch up? With strategic planning, Gen X still has a path to financial security, but they have to overcome significant retirement hurdles, including limited savings and rising debt levels. That's tomorrow, but for now, we still have way more to talk about, and I'm Luke Guerrero, the one who will be talking to you about it. We are ready to take your calls anytime at 888-99-CHART.
There are some things you don't need to splurge on, but a high-quality mattress isn't one of them. Think about it. You sleep on your mattress every night for years, and the value of good quality sleep impacts your daily routine, so it should never be taken for granted. Avocado Green Mattress is made with superior craftsmanship, better materials, and thoughtful design, so Avocado stays supportive and comfortable for the long haul. And you will be glad to know that Avocado is committed to maintaining the highest standards of ethical and transparent practices. That means eco-conscious production using renewable, certified organic materials. In fact, every avocado mattress is made from certified organic latex, wool, and cotton. Breathable, non-toxic materials that keep you cooler than synthetic alternatives throughout the night. In case you were wondering, Avocado Green Mattress is a bestseller that comes in three different comfort options: firm, medium, or plush. To make your purchase more accessible, there are easy financing options with Affirm. Plus, you can take advantage of up to 1 year sleep trials and generous warranties. To try before you buy, visit one of the Avocado retail stores or Premier Retail Partners to experience the comfort in person. When you want unmatched comfort and support, exceptional quality, and better sleep, look into Avocado Green Mattress. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and save up to 20% on certified organic mattresses during their Labor Day sale. Avocado, dream of better.
Did you know a single finger prick at home can give you over 180 personalized insights into how to improve your health and slow your aging? As soon as you try the True Age plus True Health Test by True Diagnostic, it will show you things you've never learned from a standard doctor's visit or your annual physical. The True Age plus True Health Test is a simple at-home kit that gives you powerful insights so you can feel better longer. True Health looks at over 105 biomarkers tied to your nutritional, metabolic, immune, and cognitive health. True Age measures 75 plus biomarkers to reveal your biological age, your pace of aging, and the age of key organ systems. It doesn't just give you a single number. It shows you how your heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. Together, the combo gives you a complete picture of your health today, along with personalized recommendations that will give you the largest bang for buck improvements to your health and to slow down aging. It's all done at home with just a quick, painless finger prick. If you're serious about living healthier and longer, visit truediagnostic.com and use my code INVEST for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code INVEST for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
The calls are free. The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, good morning, InvestTalk. Love the show. Steven here from Orange County, California. Wanted to ask your opinion on YieldMax ETFs. For those of us without a lot of knowledge or capital to invest in options, what do you think of symbol ULTY? This is a ETF that pays weekly dividends, and it's been around 10 cents for the last couple months. I've been in it for just over a month. I'm actually down as far as the purchase price, but I'm starting to see the dividends roll in here every week. I have it in a Roth IRA and just wanted your opinion on it. I've got about a 2% allocation to this fund, and I'm thinking of increasing it maybe to about 3 to 4%. Thanks so much. Bye.
ULTY is the YieldMax Ultra Option Income Strategy ETF. It is a strategy that became pretty popular in the past couple of years. We actually have a strategy similar to this at KPPP. KPP put one too many P's in there. And it is a covered call strategy. So for those of you who do not know what a covered call strategy is, you own an asset and then you write a call option, you sell a call option on that asset. Now, the benefit to you is you get that premium income, right? The downside is, well, if the price goes above that call price that you wrote there, well, then the investor is going to want to buy those shares from you. And so you are therefore capped on the upside. But with that premium income, you get some sort of hedge to the downside. So in years like this year, the year before, 2023, 2024, not going to do as well as the market because you are capped on that upside. In years like 2022, market down broadly, you can do pretty well from a relative perspective. And so when you're thinking about different covered call strategies, it's about, are you trying to minimize risk but still get some equity exposure? And are you looking for income? Because the real benefit here is the premium income that you can get. Now, this particular strategy is a bit on the expensive side. 1.3% is the net expense ratio, which is kind of expensive. But then again, if you're writing weekly, monthly, I don't know how frequently they write the call option on here. But if you're writing calls, it can be pretty expensive to maintain fund. Now, it has a lot of assets under management, about $3.2 billion under management. It's been around for quite some time, actually. No, it's only been around for about a year and a half at this point. But again, this was launched after the big craze when covered call funds were doing particularly well. Now, from a market cap perspective, actually pretty well balanced, right? You're still getting 60% exposure to large caps, but you're getting 28% exposure to the mid cap space. A lot of these names, though, interestingly enough, aren't names that I would generally expect to see as the top holdings here. AppLovin Corp, Rocket Lab Corporation, Upstart Holdings. These are names that are more likely to have a lot of volatility. So, you probably are going to be capped on the upside pretty significantly. That's why it looks like they write their calls about 15 to 30%, 15% above above the price of the stock. Now, here's the thing, right? You're looking for income, covered call fund, good way to go about it. But it's also important what you own within that fund as well, because you're not completely protected to the downside, certainly not, right? And so you want to have a fund that is well diversified across sectors and maintains a lot of, or rather takes into consideration with constructing a lot of the factors of risk here. What I'm seeing is a highly concentrated portfolio, nearly 50% tech, which is inherently not a sector that usually has a lot of yield. So for an income fund, seems a little weird, 23.46% finance. I think there are better covered call strategies, better income-focused strategies out there that give you broader diversification, don't lump you into high growth areas, and therefore expose you to a lot of risk without really seeking a lot of income on the dividend side. So I would probably look elsewhere. This guy's a little expensive too, at 1.3%. That is ULTY, the Yield Max Ultra Option Income Strategy ETF. Thanks for the call. We're going to go with two in a row. This one, again, from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel, and it's on ticker EVR from our good friend Jim Leahy, our loyal viewer Jim Leahy. Evercore says, I have been DCAing into Evercore since April, and it's up around 100% since then. I do plan on holding long term, but do you think it's overvalued at the moment? And if so, what would your re-entry price be? Well, Evercore is a leading global independent investment bank and advisory firm. It is one of the big guys, in terms of the independent investment banks, about $14 billion market cap. And as expected, as deal flow has picked up, it's done particularly well, up 36.87% over the past 3 months, up 14.6% year to date. Its revenue growing about 8% on an annualized basis. Still pretty solid growth from 2024 into what is projected for 2025. And margins, albeit a little lower than what you see with a lot of investment banks and advisory companies, still pretty solid, projected to be about 15% net margin this year. So what's really driven the prices? Well, I talked about it, right? You have earnings being beat, international expansion beyond just the US and European markets. And you have a lot of upside potential from their growing advisory footprint as well as their banking footprint. So over the next coming months, right, you want to look at deal flow. You want to look at M&A activity, how that is going to affect the bottom line, how that's going to affect and continue to affect growth. Now, you asked about valuation. Currently, it's about 19.5 times forward-looking earnings. Pretty high relative to where it's been over the past 5 years. Price to cash flow about 17 times. Let's look at this chart here real quick, year to date. I mean, it's been pretty strong since April. Yeah, April of this year, it's been on a persistent uptrend. I don't see anything from a technical momentum perspective that's telling me it's ripe for a pullback or anything over the past month or so, over the past 6 months. So, I mean, I think DCAing is generally a good idea because you never know when you're going to get a good price on something. So long as something is, you know, at a fair value, which I think this is probably at a fair value here, and is continuing to grow, continuing to expand those margins and raise those profits. That is Evercore Inc., ticker EVR. Let's talk a little bit about consumer spending. Consumer spending rose 50 basis points in the month of July, the largest increase in 4 months. Now, a lot of that was driven by motor vehicle purchases and overall broad goods demand, something you may see, in the summer generally. At the same time, core PCE inflation increased 30 basis points, up 2.9% year over year, the fastest annual pace since February, led primarily by those rising savings costs and notably higher than that 2% Fed target. Here's something that the president probably doesn't want to hear. The goods trade deficit widened sharply. It jumped 22.1% to $103.6 billion. An $18.6 billion surge in imports and flat exports is what caused that, right? One of his main concerns with tariffs, expanding trade deficit. Trade deficit on goods certainly wider in the month than expected, a lot wider. Spending on services climbed 40 basis points, What causes that? Spending on financial services, spending on healthcare, spending on housing and utilities. At the same time, dining and travel declined a little bit. And so the question is, where is this going to go over the next couple months? Because we have still a delayed impact of tariffs. What we've seen a lot is companies are for now absorbing what is likely to be passed on to consumers. And so these tariffs could continue to pressure inflation. Businesses are warning of rising import costs. They're finally being depleted of those inventories that they bought in the run-up to Liberation Day. And so households could start feeling the pinch. They will start feeling the pinch. Now, it is a differing dynamic, right? A lot of wealth is concentrated in the upper two-thirds, really upper half of this country. And so as costs rise, upper middle class, upper class individuals can stomach that inflationary pressure when lower class individuals are going to have to cut back on spending, right? They'll cut discretionary spending. So you can see restaurants, as are now, right, seeing a little bit of less spending within the restaurant space, the hotel space. And all these are suggesting that we're already starting to see some sort of budget stress. The labor market is also softening. You have job gains averaging 35,000 a month over the past 3 months versus the same period in 2024. It was averaging 123,000. And then you can see, okay, well, softening labor market, a little bit of deteriorating economy. That's why the Fed is starting to weigh rate cuts a little bit more. On the good side, prices were a bit mixed. You see gas and recreational goods were down. Furniture prices, though, still slightly higher. Now, one thing that's always important to note from these reports and always important to look out, the University of Michigan data, which shows consumer inflation expectations. And unsurprisingly, inflation expectations are on the rise. As the economy starts to seem as though it's slowing down a bit, it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next 6 months as a result of the anticipated rate cut in the month of September. Certainly, market participants' eyes will be on the effect of how it can control the softening labor market, but more importantly, its effect on inflation. Looks like we got a live call. Thomas from Santa Cruz, who has a question on ELS. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
This has been on my watch list for an extended period of time. I was kind of just going through my watch list. I didn't have an alert set for this, but this one seems like it's set a kind of a long-term support. To be honest, I don't know a whole lot about the company, but it's kind of in the sector I'm looking at for in my tax-deferred account. I was just wondering if you had any input on this. On Fidelity, it says it has a 31 PE, which seems pretty high for this kind of a company. I don't know if that's accurate. I don't know if that's forward-looking. But I thought I'd reach out to you guys and see what you think about it.
Sure. Well, generally for REITs, what you should really be looking at, and it's not the only thing you should be looking at, but price to funds from operation tends to be a bit more helpful to put in context than price to earnings, just because of the structure of how REITs and how they operate. So the price to funds from operation is about sitting in the average of its five-year range, about 19.1, the average being about 24.7, so a little bit below on a forward-looking basis. Now, ELS is Equity Lifestyle Properties. It is a self-administered REIT. They specialize in owning and managing manufactured home communities, RV resorts, campgrounds, and marinas. They have about 455 properties in 35 states and British Columbia, with 173,000 rentable sites under their care, right? They're appealing to demographics like retirees, affordable housing, and families that are looking for low-cost leisure resort style living. Now, Avalon Bay is a company we have been looking at as well. We've owned it on and off. Avalon Bay is a little bit different, right? Avalon Bay is more centered on, let's say, real estate within the residential sector that is more focused on the coastlines, right? A very different type of clientele, different type of revenue base that, given what we were just talking about in that talking point about consumer spending, is less likely to be hit as hard by inflationary pressures as the customer base that would provide revenue to Equity Lifestyle Properties. Now, it's a $12 billion market cap REIT. It's got a solid dividend, about 3.5%. It's been down year to date about 10%, down 18.13% over the past 52 weeks. Notably, it's underperformed its industry the past 2 years by 6.3% and 11.9%. Respectively. Now, what's really driven it over the past 3 months is The dividend was a little bit lower than what was to be expected. It did beat earnings, though slightly on revenue and earnings per share. But over the past 6 months, you've seen a longer trend downward. Operational growth a little bit lower, funds from operation growth a little bit lower. And, you know, overall, you're seeing a little bit more competition within the affordable alternative space. I think that generally speaking, with the trends that we're seeing in the economy where spending is going to be pressured, I'm not necessarily sure that we, you know, the right place to go is a subsector that is going to be disproportionately affected by the lower third, lower 40% of Americans being a little bit tighter on their purse. So I'd probably give it a pass on this one for now. You know, it's had a rough year, had a rough couple years actually, as has a lot of the REIT space, but this name in particular. That's Equity Lifestyle Properties, ticker ELS. Thanks for the call. All right, let's see if we can get a quick question in. We might not be able to answer it before the break, but we can at least play it now.
I have a question about what happens to a stock that I have in my IRA that delists themselves. And I'm just curious what happens. Do they just get sold to me, at that point by my IRA holder? Or should I sell them before they get delisted? Thanks a lot. Great show.
That's a really good question. So this happens from time to time, right? There are various reasons why a company may be delisted. I don't know if you know this, but each exchange has requirements, right? So certain exchanges, you have to be trading above $2. You have to have a certain amount of trade volume. That's one of the reasons why stocks do reverse stock splits, because they're not above that price threshold. But regardless, if you've found yourself in a situation where companies are about to delist, and they generally are going to let you know ahead of time when they are going to delist, the problem with not selling them, not transacting with them, and continue to hold on to them is your liquidity is drying up, right? And so eventually, if you do want to sell it, you can find yourself in a disadvantageous position where you have to take a big haircut on the value relative to what it would have been if you were to delist, because the volume is gone, right? You have to trade OTC over the counter in order to get that transaction done. So generally speaking, if a stock is about to delist, it's probably doing it for a good reason. I would get rid of it before it does. Thanks for the call. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Greer. We have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
For investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. Invest Talk.
Good morning. I'm calling with a question pertaining to Carrier Global Corp. Ticker is CARR. We're holding some of Carrier stock in our portfolio right now and are trying to determine whether we should sell it or continue to hold it. It seems like there's been some pretty wide fluctuations in the stock, and wanted to get your thoughts in terms of the short-term and long-term view and your recommendations. So thank you, and look forward to hearing from you on your podcast. Bye-bye.
Carrier Global Corporation, ticker CARR, develops and provides climate and energy solutions, including heating, ventilation, air conditioning, also known as HVAC, refrigeration, building automation, and fire and security technologies. They have a pretty solid global presence, it looks like. If you look at their revenue split, 50% in the U.S., 30% in Europe, 17% in Asia Pacific. Let's go to geographic revenue really quickly. Okay, so not a lot of exposure to China, about 3% to China. Again, 50% to the United States, Germany and the U.K. being the other names in the top three there. What has really been an interesting start to the year for them, right? Down 6.97% year-to-date, down 12% over the past 52 weeks. But up until about July, they were positive on the year. And then since July, it's been a slow trend downward from about $80 a share to about 63 cents per share. They've underperformed the home builders sector, which, you know, by, it looks like 16% in that period of time. To me, this seems to be likely structural issues here. Let's take a look at their long-term debt. $11 billion worth of debt on a $56 billion market cap company. So it doesn't seem to be that they're overly levered here. What about growth? Well, growth is stalled, right? In a time where a lot of other HVAC energy companies have been doing really well because of their contracts with databases, data centers, companies that are spending a lot of money trying to ramp up their AI-related CapEx, that has not been the case here. Their growth is stalled. It had $22.09 billion in revenue 2 years ago. This year, the revenue is projected to be $22.9. Not great. What about net income? Net income, although it's supposed to double, more than double from last year, still not near its peak in 2022. Margins improving, still not near its peak margin in 2022. And with this, it's trading at about its average forward-looking price to earnings. Price to book at about 3.8. Price to sales, looks like it's sitting at about 2.5. Now, going back to its IPO in 2020, it's at pretty strong relative strength. It's been pretty strong. But I think that it's interestingly enough for me, right, is at a time when you have massive demand for these types of businesses, for cooling, for ventilation, for affordable energy to power the AI revolution, revenue has not been growing for this company. It underperformed its industry by 17.1% this year. It was flat in 2024 relative to its industry. So in spite of the demand for solutions like the ones that it markets, it's not doing particularly well. Now, looking ahead, what are some of the headwinds? Economic uncertainty could be one of them. There is a lot more scrutiny on the energy growth trend, the trend that has caused growth within this subsector over the past couple months. And that is the fact that with all of these capital expenditures, monetization has been a real problem. So there's a lot of headwinds there, with not just that, but the core of its business, the construction cycle, and the industrial cycle broadly. I would say, given its lack of growth, if you wanted to reach towards an HVAC cooling energy solutions company, I would look elsewhere in the industry. That is Carrier Global Corp, ticker CARR. That about does it for another episode of Invest Talk. Today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirements. Whether it's really all working together, I would love to talk to you. At KPP Financial, we offer no cost portfolio reviews. We try to help bring a little bit of clarity and confidence to each and every one of you that we speak with. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. It is a free and confidential service. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes or Spotify, and be sure to check out our YouTube exclusive content over on our YouTube channel. That is Invest Talk with 2 T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.